Who the bloody hell's that?
Morning, Ange.
Ah, Anthony. How are we?
I'm really well. How are you?
Come on in.
I will do, thank you.
Did that sound staged?
Just a little.
No,
it's
fine. Yeah.
I'm going to embrace the whole lounge pant thing next time. I'm going to put my University of New Hampshire lounge pants on.
You should indeed.
You're listening to The Corona Diaries, a sometimes random and often irreverent attempt to understand the psyche of singer Steve Hogarth.
Hello and welcome to chapter 205 of The Corona Diaries. Look at us go, that's the intro at the beginning.
Yeah.
We're doing quite well there. Oh, is nobody else talking? Is it just me?
I was talking. I just said it was ready.
I'm trying to be professional and wait until you introduce me, you know.
Oh, a third person.
I could knock on the door.
Oh, can you, actually? Could you do that? Yeah. You could, couldn't you? Because you've got AirPods on. Oh, Mark, go and knock at the door.
Okay.
Come in.
Hello, am I at the right place? Oh, hello.
Oh, it's Mark.
Who the bloody hell's that?
Hey, nicely done.
I know you haven't seen me for a while, but yeah, it's nice to see you too.
Oh. Have you been all this time, Mark?
Oh, great. I went to Egypt, actually, for a little weekend. Well, three or four days just to jaunt around the pyramids, you know. Oh, somebody's clicking. What's that?
Oh, it's me for a gank, probably. Tutting.
Can you not hear that?
No?
No, it could be
you
your
still
AirPods.
Got a click?
It's stopped now.
Has it?
Weird. I'm not sure what that was.
If you're listening and you can identify that click, write in and tell us what it was. Because we're intrigued.
Nobody else heard it except me. It was in my AirPods, that's for sure, but I didn't see it on the little meter that I'm recording.
Oh, don't worry about it.
Okay, anyway.
Don't worry about it.
You can edit all that out.
Oh, and, no, it will probably all stay in. We never normally worry about little things like that.
We
go on some
that.
Right detours.
What's that clicking? Oh, okay.
That could be the episode title now, actually. What's that clicking might be. So you've just come back from Egypt. So hang on a minute. How long ago did you two see each other? I assume you'd seen each other like today.
I saw him 4 hours ago. He hasn't been to Egypt since then.
Yeah. I was about to say, if we're being honest, we did see each other a few hours ago, but that's the first time in a few weeks. You know, we've all been kind of on hold a little bit, waiting for Pete, but not to put him under any pressure if he's listening, because he should take his time. But we're planning to resume within a few weeks, and so we're gearing up for that. But I decided I always wanted to see the pyramids. I'd been to Egypt once before, but never saw the pyramids, so thought I'd go and have a look, and it was wonderful, absolutely mind blowing, really.
Now, I've had somebody who said to me, you think they're going to be kind of in the middle of nowhere, but actually you kind of almost drive down a street and there they are.
Yeah, you look one way and you can see a beautiful open desert and the pyramids, you know, like the Dark Side of the Moon cover in a sleeve. You look the other way and it's Cairo, you know, with all its craziness. So, yeah, it is a bit weird. It's right on the edge of Cairo. Well, Giza and Cairo are the two big cities either side of the Nile.
Right.
So, yeah.
Have you been to the Pyramids, Age?
No, I would like to go, if I get a minute.
Because you don't do sand as a rule, do you?
There's a lot of sand, yeah. More dust than sand, actually.
Who gives you that impression? Have I moaned about sand in the past?
You've moaned about the fact you can't stand the beach and you don't like a bit. You do about three quarters of an hour and then you've had enough.
I'm better on a nice bit of pine boarding of a bar over a beach. I'm all right with them. I can cope with sand to some degree as well as the next man. Possibly.
Okay. It just gets everywhere, doesn't it? That's the only thing about sand.
It does. You bring it home with you. Be in the bottom of your suitcase.
Yeah.
Be in your bottom as well, for that matter.
Let's leave words like sand and bottom, and let's not even go with crack. Let's just leave all those.
I used to go on holiday to a place called Sandy Bottoms in the Lake District. It was the nearest resort to Kendal. And there was no sand at all. It was all stones. But there we are. That was just, I just thought I'd say that, being as you'd put the two words together.
We ought to get on to business. This is quite impressive, actually. In fact, I'm going to ask everybody who's listening to stop for a second, put it on pause and give us a slight round of applause, because we've actually done what we said we would do, which is not only are we going to talk about An Hour Before It's Dark, but we have got a band member in the shape of Mark, to come and start the process of talking about the album. So I think, actually, we deserve a little moment, really.
We do. I think... you a clap.
Oh, you're very kind. It's not a click, is it? You're not going to give us a click?
No, that was a clap.
All right, okay.
I think Mark deserves a moment for turning up.
I think, yeah. Well, yes, and turning up on time.
Yeah, round of applause for Mr. Case.
I was feeling, you know, a little bit like, oh my God, I've got something to do today. I'm going to do it. I'm joining H and Anthony on podcast. It's great.
Is this the height of your day? Is this all you had to look forward to?
Not exactly.
That and your new window.
But it is a highlight of my day, I have to say.
For those who can't see, because obviously none of you can see because it's a podcast, you've got a new window in your office, haven't you?
I have. I've got this little studio which is in the garage, and it was a windowless room for about 3 years, and now I've finally had a window put in, so I'm very happy about that. So it's a much nicer space now. So I'm ready to get cracking on the next album. So no more excuses for not doing it.
It's illuminating your fine selection of gold discs as well, Mark. I can't help noticing on the wall.
I dusted them off and stuck a few up on the wall. Then I found a whole load more at the Racquet Club, which I didn't know I had, looking for a TV monitor that I'd lost. So that's the Racquet Club for you. It's like an Aladdin's cave.
We ought to ask them, what are they? What are the gold discs on the wall?
Well, there's at the far end, the one you can see is it's not a gold disc. It's a sort of commemorative Royal Albert Hall disc for our sold out tour that we did back in, was it 2018, 2017? I'm going to have a look. Hang on. 2017.
I haven't got any of these. I think I must have either had them and lost them or never had them or put them down and left them in a pub.
There's the obligatory Kaylee silver disc, and there's the Fuck Everyone and Run, Adel, 75,000 copies, and the live from the Cadogan Hall. Which was another.
Which I've also lost. I haven't got that either.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there's a bunch of them.
I'm getting the impression, H, that Mark is far prouder of your band achievements than you are.
No, it's nothing to do with pride. It's just absent-mindedness, really. Oh, right. I don't know what I've done with them.
They're easy to lose, aren't they? Yeah.
I don't remember ever having one.
When I found mine up in the loft, I found a few of Pete's as well, actually. He probably doesn't know they're there.
Maybe I should bring some of Pete's home and put them on my wall.
Yeah.
To make up for the ones of my own that are mislaid. Mislaid, chart, mislaid.
Mislaid gold disc.
The gold disc, there we go.
Anyway, the reason for being here. So we're going to talk about An Hour Before It's Dark. And to offset the fact that notoriously at least 50% of the people on this podcast can't remember a great deal, we've drafted in some help. So Mark is here to help with reminiscence of the An Hour Before It's Dark album. And we're going to do it in chronological order. So we're going to start with the first track on the album and we will work our way through track by track. And all we're going to do is basically pose the question, what the hell can you remember? How did the song come together? Notable bits you can remember in the recording process? Can you remember the first time you heard something that became this? And it might go back years, because obviously it results from jams and things that go on the shelf and this, that and the other. So that's the plan, hence the reason why we've drafted in some proper talent. So we'll start with a basic question, which is obviously we're talking about Be Hard On Yourself being the first track on the album. One thing I will ask, actually, I'm going to ask you this, H, before we start, because we did a little live thing when the album came out and people asked questions, and you said all the way along you couldn't say what the choir was singing right at the beginning. And is that still the case, or can you now talk about that?
I still don't know what the choir's saying at the beginning, if indeed they're saying anything. I think you've
hit the nail on the head there, H. They're not actually singing anything at all. It's just a bunch of vowel sounds, really. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So I actually did a bit of research to jog my memory
before
coming in here today. And I went through some of the, looked at some of the old jams. And so Be Hard on Yourself actually started, there was like a little thing with keys and bass. That little wafty thing that starts at the very beginning, it's just keys and bass really. Mike Hunter, in his creative wisdom, tagged that on to another thing, which he called piano arpeggio keys or something like that, which is just me, Pete and Ian playing the main riff, which you hear, the big, you know, big piano riff. And he played that to us. And that was in January 2018. And he said, what about this as a thing? He actually said, I think this would be great as an opening or as a, you know, a live thing. It just sounds like a live gig, you know. And that was kind of the start of it, really. And the next thing I could find was a kind of, not a finished song, but certainly H was singing the lyrics that we all know and love, and it was kind of arranged in a, not as it is now, but it had come a long way from that initial idea. So how we got to that point, because it was almost 2 years later, I don't remember, but it was probably a case of everybody chipping in, trying different things. There was guitar on it by this point, and it was more like a song. So, but the choir, that was when we were actually recording it, there was just some basic sort of string piano-y chords, and I thought, I'll try something a bit different. And there's a plugin, which is from Native Instruments. It's in their Contact collection. I think it might be called Freya or something like that. It's like a voices thing, and you can get it to do different sounds, you know, A, I's and O's and stuff, singing. And I literally just played those chords with this choir plugin, and it kind of sounds like words, but it isn't really. So and it was like really big and bombastic, and I thought, this is probably a bit over the top, it's going to get thrown in the bin, but I'll send it anyway since I spent a few hours working on it. And it stayed, much to my surprise.
First off, I'm kind of pleased that there isn't... I mean, I kind of... In one breath, I hoped there was a secret. There was a secret, like, message in there. You know, a bit like the Beatles play backwards or something, you know. But actually, it's nice that it kind of is just what it is, you know, because it is a remarkably atmospheric way to start, and it certainly then ties in with other bits of the album when you go. But the bit that was really interesting then for me there was two things. One, obviously, how far back we're talking for that sort of arpeggiated piano riff. And also the fact that Mike was like, this is a great opener, because it's almost got that little bit of slang about it, you know, where you come in with that at the beginning that always sounds like, wow, something's about to happen.
Something's about to happen. Yeah.
And it's absolutely got that kind of vibe to it, you know, in the same way. H, do you remember hearing it and rummaging through and getting any idea for singing over it and...
No, I
brilliant.
All of these things sort of happen when we're jamming, and the process is so organic that, I mean, every now and again I can look back and remember the moment of the inception of an idea, but more often than not, they're all things that happen when I was sort of, you know, Jackson Pollockin, throwing paint at the wall. Hoping something will stick while the band are jamming. And, you know, you kind of get a feeling sometimes that, oh, we're onto something here. This is sounding good. I hope Mike bursts into the room and says it's great in a bit, or, you know, because sometimes I have that feeling and he walks into the room looking distinctly underwhelmed. And I think, oh, maybe that was just one of those things that was fun to play rather than fun to listen to, because there are two kinds of music in that sense. But sometimes, you know, you'll be kind of thinking, oh, I wonder if this feels like we're onto something. And he bursts in and goes, that's great, you know. And that's got legs, and we'll come back to that. So I don't really remember... I don't remember any of that. I mean, obviously, I remember the you know, big ball of rocks and water, that lyric about the earth. You know, why would you kill it? Be hard on yourself. You've been spoilt for years. I mean, I'm really talking to myself when I say things like that. I'm not preaching to the world. I'm kind of looking in the mirror, because I have been In some sense, we all have, haven't we? I think if you live in the Western world, unless you're properly, you know, utterly skint and homeless, you know, putting those people on one side, everybody else has had it pretty good. You know, we're all pretty comfortable. You know, we're not starving to death. We've got a roof over our heads, and in that sense, we've done all right. So I don't really remember hanging those words on the jam at all. I remember the, you know, foot down, get ready, push the button, blow it all up. I remember that moment in the studio and everybody kind of, the thing suddenly felt like it was rocking and everybody, I was getting nods of approval all over the room for that. And where does it go then? Does that whole thing, doesn't it? And goes sort of into 3/4.
More gentle thing.
Talk to me of daddy doo doo doo. I had terrible trouble with those words because they really had to scan. You know, don't talk to me of this or that and the other daddy 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 da di daddy 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 daddy. I had lots of different lines for that were a bit. I can't remember what I had, but they were all a bit cumbersome. And you know, Mike kept looking at me as if to say, "Well, I hope you're going to change them a bit." And so I did quite a lot of work on that section before I arrived at, you know, the world has seen enough, patient bags of blood. I was quite pleased with that when I finally landed on it. But I put a lot of work into that bit of it. It wasn't just thrown down.
Yeah, you were singing something about talking to me of love and something about too hard a word or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And then that kind of, you know, it was a nice enough line, but it didn't have much to do with the subject matter for the song. So I had to sort of rewrite that section.
We've moved about a bit though. So we start at the beginning. We've got the piano all fine doing its thing, and then obviously you get to lust the bit where it drops down, the lust for luxury bit, which is kind of the second set. I mean, they sound like distinct. Separate bits. I'm assuming they came out of separate.
They did, because the jam that I came across that was after the first one, where H was singing on it, which was probably 2 years later, probably at the point where we were actually really into working on. When did we release the album? Was it? God. Come on, somebody help
one
me
of
here.
Us should know that.
Was it 2 years ago?
You're here to know stuff, Mark. You're not here to ask. Questions.
Okay, well, it was around about 2020, so sometime mid-2020, this version is basically the first part with the big balls of rocks with the big piano and all that, and then it cuts straight to the last part that with the sort of harmonic-y, it sounds like a harmonic-y guitar, but I'm playing it, ding, 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 ding thing, you know, I can't sing it, but it's, you know the bit I mean?
Mm. I didn't realize. Right, okay. I didn't realize you'd played that.
So all that, what I was going to say anyway was all that middle section that we were just discussing now wasn't there. So it was definitely came from somewhere else, and it was slotted in to, you know, to the arrangement. But I don't know if it came out of, because what we often do, Mike likes us to take something that we've got, like a jam that we've worked on, and play around it and see where it goes, see where it leads us. And quite often it'll take us somewhere to a piece of music which is related but doesn't sound like it came from the same thing, you know. So it's quite possible those middle sections kind of evolved from the first section. It's just or they could have happened on a completely different day and somebody went, oh, what about that, let's try that there, you know.
Because if you look at the first part and you've got the Be Hard on Yourself, you know, kind of, I'm not going to say chorus, but that bit where it breaks into that, and then the run towards the things that scare you, which feels like it's speeding up or double timing or what have you, feels like something that would naturally come out of that chord progression.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure.
So that does feel like an extension that comes out.
Yeah.
You're playing that, and then at one point in time you go into the thing, and that's probably naturally where it would take it. As a kind of very, very loose musician, that's how it sounded to me.
And the chords and the bass parts move around quite a bit to different things, but it's essentially following the same pattern, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels like it is. It feels just like, you know, whereas actually as soon as you go to the next bit, you go to the... you know, because obviously that takes us to the strapping, get ready bit and all that, and that does sound similar. And then you go to the Don't Talk to Me of Need, which is very much led in with that drums, which I think always to me sounds like the kind of thing you'd expect Ian to play.
Yeah.
That's a very Ian kind of fill-based rhythm, isn't it? Because it's knocking around on the toms a bit. But that definitely feels like a departure from where we've been at that point.
And I think a lot of those drum parts came from jamming, because it's, you know, he was just messing about trying different things, and then Mike kind of edited it all into a sort of arrangement, really. Because when you listen to how the different drum patterns work against the vocal parts, you've got these, you know, verse chorus type arrangement. They don't always fall the same way. You know, sometimes he's doing a particular pattern over a verse part, and other times he's doing the same pattern over a chorus part, you know. So it's just kind of what sounded best, rather than saying, oh, let's just follow the convention of having a different drum pattern for the verse and chorus. It was just whatever worked best in the dynamics and what was happening with the lyric, you know.
So that middle section, to your point, that definitely got added quite a bit later, because you've got a version of it kicking around where it's not part of the song.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what you're kind of saying is that the You Can Learn section at the end feels more like the bit at the beginning, effectively.
Well, it was certainly added or joined to the bit at the beginning fairly early on, but then was then unjoined and added, and something else was put in the middle, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so it's wrenched open with a bit shoved in.
Exactly. A bit of a cut and shut, or a cut and open and add a bit in. it quite often happens, you know, sometimes because H has got a lyric that he wants to say and there's no room for it. So we're like, okay, well, we need to make some new music for this lyric or whatever, you know, so it's... Or it just feels like the arrangement needs something else before we get to where we're going, you know.
Cool. Any of that ringing a bell, H?
No. But what Mark's saying is true. Quite often, in the jams have maybe had a section of a lyric that's worked over a piece of music that we've then welded somewhere else to another bit of music that might be the same lyric. But in doing so, the thing that makes sense of it has gone missing. You know, the words in between section A and section D, sections B and C of the lyric don't exist because the music's only used A and D.
Yeah, we're kind of a bit ruthless about poor H's lyrics because we'll have an arrangement and then we'll say, oh, but this isn't really working musically. And before you know it, we're hacking away sections of the song that H needs in order to make sense of the lyrics. So
it used to really upset me, but I've kind of got, because we've been in this process for so many years now, I'm a bit more serene about it, because I know that at some point in the process I'll probably get a chance to make sense of it by actually inserting more music to make the point, or by just rewriting the lyrics and making it make sense another way. But you know, if you go back 15 years or so, I used to get very stressed out during the writing, because I'd have these lyrics and I'd find that they've been hacked to death and now didn't make any sense. Sometimes it'd even start with what I was going to sign off with is at the beginning of the song. You know, what I was going to start with has ended up at the end, and I'm going, this makes no sense.
I'd like to make a very public apology on behalf of the members of the band for putting you through that.
Yeah,
I mean, it happened in El Dorado, didn't it? Because we had this song, and we were starting it halfway through the first verse lyrically. Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. Then, do I remember?
and we're going, this is great. And then H is going, hang on a minute. You can't start it there. It's halfway through the verse. It wasn't even the beginning of a line.
Come to break the heavy weather. That's where it was starting. I go, what's fucking come to break the heavy weather? You can't start with that. Well, why not? It sounds lovely to me. And they all, oh, it sounds lovely to me. And I think, yeah, but it doesn't mean anything. And in the end, I whispered, you know, the monster, you know, the heavy sign of the monster, the thunder approaches the heavy sign of the monster, come to break the heavy weather. So in the end, I got away with it by literally just talking it or whispering it over the little bit of music that led to it. And then I was all right, and then I could relax because it made sense.
I'm sure this is not the case, Mark, but is there those moments when something like that happens where you get together as a foursome and go, oh, just fucking put him a little bit of a pad cord down or something he can say something over just to get him...
No, but I think in the same way that H is saying that he found it very stressful and frustrating, it was kind of working the other way certainly with me, where you sort of think you're just concentrating on how the music flows and you know, the arrangement of the music, and not caring as much about the lyrics, you know, which is, I know it's doesn't make sense, especially not to H. But then when a musical, I can't think of the example now, but there was another musical thing that happened that got axed. And I was like, oh, but that's a great moment. You can't get rid of that. And it was, and you know, but it was for the lyrics that it had to go, you know. So
we all have our crosses to bear.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, hopefully we all reach a point where we all think what we've got is really good. So it just takes, sometimes it takes a bit of patience with each other and been trying to, if you don't see it from the other person's point of view, at least be willing to entertain the idea until you do get it. I mean, Mike has the same thing. Mike Hunter will suggest stuff or play stuff to us and we'll all just go, not sure about that. But he doesn't say, what's the matter with you? You know, he just goes, okay, and moves on. But now we've realised, you know, then 6 months later, we'll come back to this thing that he played us and we all went, nah. And we go, that's great.
Why didn't we use that mic? And he'll go, ah!
But he doesn't say, I told you so. So, yeah. Probably bangs his head against the wall when we're not there, you know.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
No.
So in Marillion terms then, in how complicated was Bihard on Yourself to come together? Because it looks like three very, fairly distinct sections.
I think it was a song that came together a lot from jams. So, I mean, we didn't really do a lot of... It wasn't like we wrote the song, routined it, and then did it all in one take. It was really edited together in the studio from different sections. And so the real challenge with that one was when it came to playing it live, because there's sections of it where the stuff going on with Ian, is sometimes, you know, if the sound isn't perfect, you haven't got a perfect balance, it's really hard to keep in time, you know. So
he's playing across the beat and he's sometimes playing across everything. So, yeah, if you can't hear the band perfectly, he's stuffed.
Is it an easy song to play at the beginning of a set then? I mean, bearing in mind it opened that tour.
No, it's a bad choice for an opening song, because if the monitors are going to be, you know, not as good as they can be, it'll be at the beginning. Mm. They get, you know, if there's a problem, it kind of gets improved as, you know, if the balance isn't quite right. You've got time to sort it out through the first three songs. But with that one, you're just straight in and, you know, there's not really much you can do. So it was a challenge, really.
So as much as that riff is a great riff to start a set with, once that piano riff is a great thing to kick off with, it really instantly gets every... It's actually not a great song in that respect, in terms of the transitions.
Getting settled in with a nice balance and everybody getting comfortable, no.
We are kind of blessed, though, usually. 49 out of 50 times we're blessed with a good long sound check. Yeah. So we do have the time to whack through these things, and we used to usually finish the sound check with it, didn't we, so that we were ready for it when we came on stage. So provided nothing had really been changed, we were kind of all right. But I do remember I almost got sick of that song, because we played it so many times in sound checks and over and over and over and over again till it came together. But it was a pressure song, really, to start with. There was always a sense of the fingers being crossed when I ran on to sing it, thinking, will it be all right? Am I in the right place?
Am I right in saying that the first tour that you did through the pandemic. Am I right in saying that the album hadn't come out at that point? Or are we saying the album had? I'm now just racking my own brain, because I'm wondering if I heard you play this out of context of the album, because it was the first thing you put out, wasn't it?
I think we played it before the album was released somewhere, didn't we? Maybe it was at Port Zealand or something.
Yeah, I think we might have done it at PC. Yeah, did we do it on a UK tour? Even.
Do you think the cabbages need some water?
Well, I mean, I'm not helping here, am I?
Bit of baby bio.
I'm not helping at all. Just to explain that comment, folks, the first thing when we were talking about, just before we started recording, was Mike's comment about the band. I don't know who said it, actually. I don't think it was you, Mark, that said it. I'll let you share it with everybody.
Well, no, we were just saying that we're a bunch of cabbages and Mike's a horticulturist rather than a producer these days, you know, tending to the cabbages.
I do think that's absolutely brilliant. I'm now trying to find out when the album
came out. It would be funny if
it
wasn't true.
Well, Audio Gardener.
You know, I now might be regretting this idea of getting everybody else in for a bit of support. And actually, I might just be getting double cabbages on the call, effectively, instead of single.
It's going to be illuminating, isn't it, as time goes by?
I'm also just about to kill my son, who has just started printing on my printer downstairs.
Oh, bless him.
If you hear a click, Mark.
I can't hear it.
I've not heard clicks for a while now.
All right, okay, that's good. So, yeah, I was just coming, in terms of asking about the live thing, I wondered if one of the reasons why that also track has that thing about being live was because you essentially not only did it on the album tour, that you were doing it a bit before, and it was the first thing we all heard off the album anyway.
That's right. That's coming back to me actually a little bit. That we did do. It was most definitely that song. Were there any others, or was it?
I
just
don't
that
think
one?
There was. You know, I'm going back
it's just
now.
That
do you know
one.
The, you yeah. know the dates that were on the diary. You know the because obviously you've covered this in those extra bits of diary, and I'm thinking that. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to Setlist FM and see if I can find it while we're talking. But I've got a sneaking suspicion. And I
we start. Did we start in Hull?
You did start in Hull.
Was that?
I'm already looking. Actually, I'm on Setlist FM. I mean, we did start in Hull because I had COVID.
That's right. That nobody could know about.
That's yeah. right. Nobody could know.
Well, I'd had COVID. I was in kind of, you know, in that period where you shouldn't really go anywhere because it's been only a week.
Yes,
but.
Well, I'm going to tell you because I found it. It was the dates were at the end of 2021. So in terms of when the album came out, I think the album came out in 22, actually, or to the end. Well, it must have been because the date I was at was November 18th at Bridgewater Hall. And you opened with Sounds That Can't Be Made. You went to King, Afraid of Sunlight, You're Gone, Easter, Bridge, Living With a Big Light, Runaway. And then you played Be Hard on Yourself.
Wow.
And then you carried on from there. It's got Berlin after that. I don't know if there's anything after that. Yeah, Berlin, The Release, Neverland, and you encored with Splintering Heart, Made Again, and then you played The Leavers at the end.
That's a long set.
Well, I think everybody was just desperate to see something because we'd all been locked up, hadn't we, for, you know, it was obviously that first.
Did we not do a bit more work on it after that as well, Mark? Because I think when we actually did the An Hour Before It's Dark tour, I think Be Hard on Yourself had become more complicated than it was on those dates. I remember thinking, we seemed to rattle through this no problem at all on the last tour, and now we can't. But I think we added things to it at the 11th hour. I've got a feeling we might have done. Because it had got trickier.
I honestly don't remember. I'd be guessing.
The one thing we have answered was you did play it on the road. You played it in that. It was the Light at the End of the Tunnel tour.
Yeah.
That was it.
And then I guess I've got a sneaking suspicion the album landed March, April time following year.
It did, because we were up in the northeast somewhere doing signing them all. And that was February, mid-February we were doing the signings, because I remember we were there on Valentine's Day.
We went back to Blackburn.
Blackburn, that was it. So, yeah, the album probably came out a few weeks after that.
Mm. So that, right, that makes sense. In which case then, I think we'll have a little break and we'll go to a bit of diary, because I didn't use all the diary from last week. So there's a bit of diary left, which is from the last tour, isn't it?
That would have been in Europe, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did. Where I did. We popped a bit of Utrecht in last week, and I think there's some Utrecht and Paris for this week.
Right.
Do you have any show sponsors? You know, like, are you happy with your wash? You know, that sort of thing. I mean,
no, we pondered
you know, like
it.
Some podcasts you listen to, and the actual host of the podcast will suddenly launch into an advert for something. You know, I just wondered if you fancied doing that, H or A.
Well, actually, we did talk about this. Right at the beginning, when we talked about monetizing the podcast, we did talk about that. And to be fair to H, he said from the word go, I do not want advertising on the podcast. I don't want to be seen to endorse something that I don't necessarily believe in or use or this, that and the other. So,
that's fair enough.
Right from the beginning.
Soap powder adverts.
No. So all of that, we don't do that. So we just directly take money off the people who listen to it instead.
Sounds fair enough.
and H is very comfortable with that.
Well, you know, you've got to pay the rent somehow.
Well, he was trying to crowdfund a dressing gown a fortnight ago.
I was. But we didn't put that into action. That was just a sort of more of a discussion, wasn't it?
I nearly fell off my chair when I saw how much they were.
Oh, I know. I'd sent you a link, didn't I?
Yeah. £3,000
for a dressing gown. It might as well be worth your while.
Yeah, New and Lingwood dressing gowns. Check them out. £2,500.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, no, amazing. Bonkers. It's the kind of thing, you know, Etonians wear in between study groups. And
yeah.
I could definitely see you in one. I mean, honestly, I can. So, anyway, let's go to that bit of diary.
Oh, yes. Here it comes. October 25th, Utrecht, next morning. Got up and walked over to Oudijn for breakfast. It was a lovely day and we popped into a little stationery shop to buy Niall an overdue birthday card. Ended up buying all sorts of things in there, including a wooden shaker, a gift for Lewis, and more greetings cards. Vibes bought a pen and we also bought a cool wooden sellotape dispenser Lynetta and I took a shine to. We then had breakfast in Oudijn before returning to the Tivoli to soundcheck. Soundcheck seemed to go well. Tonight we will play Fantastic Place as a special request to a chap who lost his wife to a strange and unknown condition whereby she lost all her senses, taste, heat, cold and emotion. As a consequence, her life lost all meaning and she simply faded away and died. His email was one of the most tragic things I've ever read. We ran through the song again at soundcheck. It will be fine. Afterwards, Vibes had asked Ian if he might be allowed to play his drum kit. Ian said sure. He had spent days learning if my heart were a ball it would roll uphill. He put his ear pods in and played it in considerable style. I was very proud of him. With Mosley and Lewis looking on, most kids would have died of nerves. The experience was multiplied for us all when Phil switched on the PA and Emil's performance thundered round the room. What a trip for him. Afterwards, Lewis said, I've got a drum kit you can have, and promptly promised to ship it to our house. Vibes left the earth and didn't come down for a couple of days. He's a lucky boy. After soundcheck, I returned to the hotel with the boys while Lynetta went mooching round the shops in Utrecht. The boys went to their room and I lay in the dark for an hour and tried to sleep. Show in Utrecht was to be the best of the tour so far. Audience vibe was completely stellar and even Pete came off stage at the end declaring it to have been one of the best he could remember. Pete's never happy, so that was a clear indicator of the show.
And we're back.
Yeah!
And Mark's still with us, which is great. By the way, Mark, is that surfboards on your T-shirt?
It is, actually, yeah. Yeah, I don't do surfing, but I bought a T-shirt. It's a weird fish T-shirt. I think it is surfboards, but there you go.
Right, do like that. Do like that. Very nice. We were just talking in the break a little bit, and you were sort of saying, are you going to do this with the other guys and talk about different songs? And then said you actually had a Reprogram the Gene kind of nugget.
Well, while I was doing my research, being professional in preparation for this podcast, I dug out the first demo for Reprogram the Gene as well. And it's got like a completely different intro. I don't know if you remember. We had like a... It's kind of... What would you call it? Predictable, really. And Mike didn't like it. And he literally chopped it off and put that... The intro that you now hear on the album, which is just me noodling around on the piano. It was just me in the studio one day noodling around on my own, and Mike went, what about this as an intro? And everybody went, yeah. So that was a bit of a strange one, because I was like, doesn't sound like it's been worked on at all. It's just, you know, somebody just plodding around on the piano. But it works really well. But the song itself...
You're good when you're plodding around, Mark. I keep
saying...
But
the song itself is really slow.
Oh, yeah. Well, we tend to write everything about 30 BPM slower than we record it. And then we tend to record it 30 BPM slower than we wish we had.
It's slow, and it's a bit like the Water Boys, Hole of the Moon. You're singing. It's got a big open guitar, and you're doing the piano stuff, and it's...
Ding, 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 yeah, ding, 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 yeah, probably yeah. Down there.
And it's kind of real, you know, but what's his name, Mike Scott? Is it the Water Boys
yeah,
singer?
Mad Mike.
You're definitely channeling him.
Yeah, I probably was for that. I would think I was channeling Mad Mike and Patti Smith in equal sort of proportions. I was trying to get
I expect that. those demos will probably see the light of day one day. They're quite interesting. Anyway, that's all I had to say on that one.
How much of this kind of stuff have you got then, Mark? I mean, because it's never come up when I've been chatting to H. So clearly if it's passed through his fingers, it's passed through fleetingly and been forgotten. Are you more of a cataloguer? I mean, because clearly you've laid your finger on stuff today with no real effort.
No real effort, because it was incidental to my real purpose of what I was doing. So if I explain, so we have a SoundCloud account that the band all have access to. It's a private account, and all the jams that we've ever done, really, it's in the last 15 years are on this account. There's over 1,000 jams. These are all the jams that were worth saving, basically. And I decided to go through them and literally catalog all their keys and tempos, with the idea that then, and you know, the energy levels. There's a DJ program called Mixed in Key, which basically will analyze a sound file and tell you what key it's in, what the tempo is, and what the energy level is. It's not always accurate, but it's, you know, I think the idea is if you're a DJ mixing between songs, you want to be able to, you know, seamlessly move from one song to another with keys that are complementary and a tempo that's similar and all that sort of thing. But I thought, actually, that would be quite useful for tracking down ideas that might go together if you're looking for something in a particular key or a particular energy level or a tempo. So I thought it'd be worth plugging all our 1,000+ jams into this program. And then, I had to listen to them all and grade them all, give them all some sort of, you know, one to five stars on what I think about how good or bad they are. And then, so I marked any that we'd used, I marked as used. So all I had to do today was just literally go through and listen to all the used ones and just find these jams. So that's how I found them so easily. But this was really just in preparation for the making of this album. I thought it would be useful to be able, because I'm really bad at remembering things that we've done. Well, you know, Pete's great at this, and Mike's really good at it as well, where he would literally go, oh, what about that idea from, you know, way back when? Let's try that. So this is my way of using technology to help me narrow down the search a bit, you know.
And are you good at tasks like that then? Can you apply yourself? Because that 1,000 jams still sounds like a lot of work.
It took me months.
Right.
It broke me.
Right.
No, it's fine. I just did I do like an hour here, an hour there, you know. Because if you listen for too long, you actually get numb to the things, and you kind of miss the stuff that's really good. And But, you know, first thing in the morning, if you do half an hour, everything you listen to first thing in the morning always sounds better to me anyway. Mm. You know, songs, generally, you put something on in the morning, it's like, wow, this sounds great, you know, when you're not tired. So it's a good time to do it.
And is that visible to the rest of the band then, because it's a public account, or are they now saved somewhere else?
The mixed and key thing that I've done is not visible to the rest of the band, but I'm happy to share it with them. It's just on my computer. I told Mike about it. I don't know if he's experimented with it, but the SoundCloud with all the 1,000+ jams are there for everybody to do what they want with. And you know, sometimes members of the band do chop things together, try different things, or suggest different things. So it's and we draw up lists of our top 30 or our top 40 or you know, or things that we've liked that have been overlooked. You know, because like. Sometimes it happens. The big guitar riff in Care that's in Maintenance Drugs, you know, the where H sings the high
hour an hour before it starts.
That was from 2010. That little idea. So it does happen that we come up with something that all of us like, but we never find a home for it. You know.
Yeah, we'd all said that's fantastic. What the hell are we going to do with it? You know, but. You just have to be patient again, because the really, really good things usually eventually find a home, because you never completely forget that they exist, so they're always sort of on your radar, and that definitely on Mike's radar. He was telling me that the chorus of... I mean, this is the wrong album, but the chorus of... you don't want to sing Fuck Everyone and run in the really high voice...
That was just like a little piano voice thing. Yeah.
Tiny, tiny, weeny little, you know, barely sung thing, piano and voice from God knows how far back. And he pulled that out of nowhere and just said, what about this? And, we all thought, oh, that's really, what was it? And somebody said, well, why is he singing Fuck Everyone in Rome? do you remember?
Yeah. Now there's a link to the Vatican there, and I'm going to leave it well alone.
It was so long ago. I was thinking, yeah, why am I singing Fuck Everyone in Rome? It took me a while before I realised what it was I'd been doing.
Actually, you should do misheard lyrics for age. There's the Man of a Thousand Faces, Stoned in the Parthenon, Stoned in the Parking Lot. Is what was I was told somebody thought that was.
Yeah.
And this and what was the other one that. There was another lyric that you it's got out of my head now. Anyway, that's a little thing we could get going.
Pete sometimes sings them, you know, as backing exactly, vocals, because he's never found out the real ones.
That must come as a bit of a shock in the old monitors.
I have to take him on one side and have a quiet word, Pete.
They aren't the lyrics.
That's not what it is.
I love that. Pete singing in a pub singer style. Well, Mark, thank you very much for finding the time. I definitely think we've unearthed some little gems there in terms of actually the song itself and how it all came together. So thank you. It's been very much appreciated. And thank you for your little Reprogram the Gene nugget as well. Is there any possibility that if H needed to, you could send a few files in his direction in terms of prep for the upcoming weeks?
Of course, yes.
That would be quite helpful.
What, you want me to do prep?
Or you could send them to me,
I suppose.
Mark.
I should, really, shouldn't I?
Maybe send them to me.
Send them
do you mean the demos that relate to all the other songs on the album?
I was thinking that, yes, to so I could put a little bit of time into kind of prompt, say a few things and prompt a few memories.
I'll pop them all into a Google Drive folder and share the folder with you both, and then you can do what you want with it.
Oh, what a star. Look at that.
Thank you.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, the ones I've got, I'm sure I haven't got everything, because these are more of the sort of, well, there's a few.
Yeah.
So,
the listeners will go into shock. They go, it's almost as though he knows what he's doing.
I know. It's going to be a clamour, you know, to actually have Steve Hogarth taken off the Corona Diaries and replaced with Mark Kelly moving forward. I mean, I can't say whether I'd support it or not, but I mean, it's seeming like a reasonably good idea from here.
I've got no problem with that, as long as I can have the money.
I knew that was coming. Yeah, just not going to change the bank account.
You both just said how much this has been a rod for your own backs, and you kind of wished you... Not that you wish you hadn't got into it, but now you're into it, you don't know how to get out.
We don't know how to stop.
And now you've found a way. You want me to take it over. I'm not doing it, okay? Yeah, I refuse.
You need to take it on.
It's all yours.
I'll bless you for that.
Right.
Right, Mark, you're an absolute star. Lovely to see you. Hopefully see you very... You're always welcome. You're always welcome.
Yes, well, perhaps you could come back later on in the album and tell us about The Crow and the Nightingale, or just choose another one that you remember.
Yeah, Crow and the Nightingale. I'm going to do that for Lucy for the filming thing next Friday. So it's... Yeah, because there's a lot of nice, well, keyboard-related stuff with that one, which is worth... relaying, hopefully it'll be interesting. Yeah. But happy to talk about it,
any of them, really. I mean, the way that Care came together. I mean, the Angels section,
the demos for Care are really good, so I think that's... You should have a good one with that. There's all the different sections, there's demos for it.
I'm going to say goodbye for the purpose of the podcast, so bye everybody. H, are you going to do the same?
Bye everybody.
And goodbye from me too, and thanks for inviting me, it was fun.
Thanks for coming, Mark.
Thanks for listening to The Corona Diaries. It featured Steve Hogarth with the insights and me, Ant Short, with the questions. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and maybe leaving a review, as this will help others find it. You could even share with other like-minded souls, should the mood take you. This has been an A Short Stories production.